Without any further ado, I'm Mark Shapiro, and we have a very nice crowd with us, and more are going to be logging in soon. And this is the second in a series of interviews we're having with Jewish leaders, particular places we travel to. And we spoke with someone from Morocco last week. This week, we're very privileged and pleased to have Rabbi Desani of Rome. As I'm sure he'll probably tell us, the Jewish community of Rome is the oldest diaspora community outside the Middle East. Jews have been here since classical period time. In a minute, I'll ask you about your biography. Maybe you're one of those who goes back 2,000 years, because they say that the Jews of Rome can date themselves longer than any other people in the city, uninterrupted presence. So it's a real thrill to have Rabbi Desani with us. I want to begin. Well, first, we'll speak a little bit of background and then a series of questions about Jewish life in Italy, the challenges, your role. Perhaps we'll get to discussions of the Vatican and your involvement with that. And then we'll take some questions. And in about 45 minutes, we'll open it up maybe to the floor to take some questions. So let me begin with you telling the listeners about your background. How long your family's been in Italy? You also have an unusual story. You're not just a rabbi; you're a doctor as well. And perhaps tell us about your role in addition to being a rabbi with the rabbinical seminary. And who are you? Who are your teachers? Let us begin with
that. Many questions. First of all, it's a pleasure to be with you. I am mixed blood because my father belongs to a very old, original Italian Jewish family. Desani, it means that the family came from a little town close to Rome. It's called Desani, as you know, the Jewish family name are very often connected to geographic origin. So it is Desani, a family name that started when the Pope Paul the Fourth started the ghetto in Rome. I'm talking about the 1515, 1555. So my family from my father's side come from this origin. My mother was Ashkenazi, born in Romania. She grew up in Bulgaria, where her father was a rabbi of the Ashkenazi, who were a minority in Sephardi community of Ruse on the border of the Romania. Then my mother came to Italy to study pharmacy and met my father, who was making a residence as a pediatrician in Florence. So this is the story of the origin of my family. So I have relatives all around the world, even in the United States and in Israel, Argentina, and so on, and many relatives here in Rome. So this is the genetic background. Second question, the training. I made the parallel studies, studying in first of all the Jewish school, then the junior and senior high in the general school, and I studied medicine at the University of Rome, and in the parallel pathway, since I was a young child, I studied in the rabbinical seminary of Rome. It is called Collegio Rabbinico Italiano. It is a school for training the rabbis. It was the first one to be founded in Western Europe in 1829. We are almost 200 years old, the school. And it was founded in the northern eastern Italy, and still exists. Of course, we are not hundreds of pupils, just a little. And the teacher were originally local teacher, rabbis trained in Italy, but we have a very strong tradition that the main teacher, the teacher of Gemara Poskim, comes from Israel, is normally Shaliach from Israel. So we have a training which is based on of mixing the the schools and the tradition of many other, of many places.
How many students are studying in it right now?
Pardon?
How many students are training to be rabbis now?
It's an open school, so many people come there because it is a center of study and there are not so many alternatives for studying traditional studies. So I can tell you there are a basic 20 to 30 students and a general shade of tenths of other students who joined lectures. We now, even before the COVID, we started to make digital lectures and with Zoom. We discovered Zoom before the war.
I don't think many of our listeners realize, though, that you being a doctor also is part of a long tradition in Italy. In fact, a few nights ago, we were speaking about Rabbi Lanfranti, who was a doctor, and you had many Jewish doctors, including rabbis, coming out of Padua. So you follow in a good tradition. I'd like to ask you, though, if you could just tell the listeners where Jews, because many of them have been to Italy, but many have not, and some who've been to Italy really don't know about the Jewish community, where the major centers of Jewish life in Italy are today, and also where you have smaller communities that still have enough that they can have a minyan on Shabbat.
Okay, the geographical distribution of the Jews in Italy still is a consequence of the story of Gerush Sfarad, because the southern Italy was a part of the Spanish Empire. So when the Jews were expelled from Spain, were expelled also starting from Sicily up to Naples. So the southern Italy, the number of Jews is very, very small. I think being optimistically not more than 400, 500. The greatest community in Italy is Rome, which is half of the Jews in Italy. About we have about 13,000 registered, and some other were not registered to the Jewish community. The second community is Milan, Milano, with about 7,000 Jews, and other smaller community, not over 1,000 Jews, are in Turin, Genoa, Florence, Venice, Bologna, Padua, in this kind of center. Once, even up to 100 years ago, there were many tiny centers with the Jewish population, but they disappeared. There was a process of urbanization, so they are concentrated in the major places. But even the major places, even a place where you have 300, 400 Jews, it's difficult to have minyan, because people are scattered over around the town, and not many of them are so sensitive to the necessity to have minyan each Shabbat and so on.
And in terms of the level of intermarriage, is it high like in other countries or not so much?
No, well, we have to make a little difference between Rome and the other communities. Roma is relatively little bit better, but in our evaluation there is at least 40% of intermarriage, at least. But now people, the problem is not intermarriage, people don't marry even. So we cannot know exactly what happens.
And in terms of schooling for the children, what do you have in Rome, if you can tell our listeners?
We have Rome all the up to, well, in Italy, the final degree, you get the final degree after 13 classes, 13 classes. So we have all the system from the beginning up to the maturity level. In the basic 8 years, we evaluate that about 65%, two-thirds of the potential population is registered to the Jewish school. And the other classes, the higher classes, the number, the percentage is shrinking about 20%.
And do they have to, I mean, does the government assist this or it's all private tuition?
And they have to pay. They have to pay. And it is difficult to go to the Jewish school because there is only one at the middle of the town. You have to cross the traffic every day. You have to pay. There are some other problems. One problem is also the security problem. If you walk around there, you will see a lot of police, and not also, and is also there is also an internal system of bitachon, security system. So from one point of view, it's very safe. You cannot see drugs circulating outside or inside, but the other point of view that it exposed like any other Jewish school, unfortunately, to the possibility of bad talks.
Well, that actually could bring us to another topic. Us, most of the listeners here, or many at least, are in North America, and we are in Israel, and we hear about stuff happening in Europe. So how, although we haven't heard that much about Italy, how would you judge today both anti-Semitic sentiments versus maybe from years ago, and also anti-Israel, which often, of course, are identical, and although they're termed anti-Zionist. Is that something that's getting worse in Italy, like we see in many other places?
According to the monitoring systems, there are some period when the wave is getting bigger. Apparently, there were much more anti-Semitic feelings or expressions in the last 2 years, many of them linked to the crisis of the COVID and the theme of people getting ill and the complot, the plot theories and so on. Anti-Semitism is not, at the present moment, maybe after 5 minutes it will change, but at the present moment I don't feel it there's a real danger for the Jews. There are many kinds of anti-Semitism. The most important, most relevant was the anti-Israeli, which is a kind of anti-Semitism, as you know. Maybe you don't agree, but anyway, when there are winds of war in Israel, in Gaza, so you will feel many attacks against generally the Israel, but and the Jews also. So it depends by the general situation. Even the Muslim anti-Semitism, fundamentalist, and so on. We know that there are groups in Italy, and they are obviously dangerous. But at the present moment, I don't know why, there are some theories about this. They didn't attack Italy as they did in other countries, for example, in France. Why this? We don't know. Maybe that this depends on the fact that Italy is a place where they can move quietly, so they don't want to waste a safe place where to move. But this is all this is a kind of interpretation.
Now, that brings up, I think, a different issue. Obviously, you as the chief rabbi and your successors have had to have relationships with the Vatican, have met the popes. I don't know how much you can speak publicly about this, but how would you judge now the relationship? Would you see the Vatican as and Jewish relations as good? And in general, what type of interfaith, if any interfaith, are you involved with the church and the Pope, which who still has a lot of authority and influence?
The first point is that the Catholic Church and the Vatican, there are two souls, two different souls. One is religious and the other one is politic. The politic side, mainly towards Israel as a state in comparison with Israel, they did an agreement, they have ambassadors and so on, but they still have a very cautious and if not hostile approach to the state of Israel and the Zionists. The other side of the question is the religious. In the last decades, as you know, there has been a revolution in the thinking and the thing and in the teaching of the church related to the Jews. So the teaching of contempt is no more effective, and the general atmosphere is an atmosphere of respect and collaboration. In the first years of this Pope, this new Pope, there were almost every week delegations of rabbis, of any kind of rabbis, of Jewish people coming to the Vatican. I said in a joke that we opened many synagogues, many new synagogues in the last 20 years in Rome, but I need another one to be built, to be opened in the Vatican, because there are many Jews circulating there every day, because they come to see the Pope. So the general atmosphere is, at the present moment also, is quiet. All the possible incidents are related to some declaration, to some improper word. For example, this Pope used to mention the word Pharisees as the traditional meaning of hypocrites and so on. So we discussed, protested, but I would say that these are marginal positions or marginal questions. The general atmosphere is quite good at the present moment, I stress, at the present moment.
That's good. Incidentally, one more thing I wanted to ask you before, because someone also asked me, in terms of conversions, you spoke about, intermarriage, I'm assuming, and someone asks, does this mean that you said that many people don't even marry anymore? Someone said that means that they're just living together. I'm assuming that's what you meant. But you probably also have people who want to convert. Do you have your own Beit Din, or do you have to bring Dayanim in from Israel to carry out conversions?
Okay, first of all, to explain, because I saw there was a question. When I say that people don't marry because they live together, but they don't marry officially because they don't want to come in all the legal problems that regular marriage can arouse. This is the first point. Okay. We have a regular Beit Din, which is officially recognized by the Chief Rabbinate of Israel. The Dayan is from Israel, but is mainly based in Italy. And we have to deal with the problem of Giur, which is split in two different main problems. One is the an adult who's coming because he's falling in love of Judaism or falling in love with the Jew, and we deal it as a regular as a normal giur. We have a specific, very detailed process with a series of exams. So everything is regulated and under control. The other big problem, which has been not still solved in the house, a lot of controversial issues in Italy and in Rome in particular, is that of the children born by intermarriage. We stopped to make Giurim in the early years of their lives before the Bar Mitzvah. And this problem is very difficult to be accepted by a wide part of the community who would like to have a more tolerant, let's say, tolerant Bedin in this issue. But the problem is that all around the world, in all of those countries, the Giur Ketanim, unless the mother is converted, is not more any way accepted. So in order to be accepted as a Bedin, we have to follow the rules of the European rabbinate and the Israeli chief rabbinate. I saw that there are questions about...
Yeah, we'll get to the questions in about 20 minutes. We'll do the questions in about 20 minutes. I'll get to them after I ask a few more questions. Then I'll get to the people who typed in.
I saw that there are questions about... someone asked why there is a spreading of a reform movement now. Because the main motivation, at least in Italy, for reform movement is not the ideology, is the issue of Giurim and the intermarriage. This is the main reason. The other reason are much less important.
In Rome, will you convert children who are adopted by non-religious parents if both parents are Jewish?
Cases of adoption are very, very rare. Mm-hmm. And in this case, we follow the way that this kind of giurim are not make automatically. We check the family and make sure that they can guarantee to their children the Jewish education and so on.
Those who've been to Rome have been to your synagogue, the main synagogue, and have seen the special Italian Nusach there. Where else in Italy do you know synagogues that actually use this Italian Nusach as opposed to the Sephardic Nusach?
The Italian Nusach is used also in Milan, in Turin, in Padua, in Jerusalem.
Yeah.
There are two Italian synagogues in Jerusalem at the present moment. The important is to see what happened in Jerusalem. And there are many people coming from Italy who want to maintain the tradition.
Well, you have, and there are certain special minhagim, which I know they practice in Rome. I don't know if they do it in the other. For example, you blow shofar and hakafot and... on Hashanah Rabbah, you have, I believe, Kol Nidre is in Hebrew. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think it's in Hebrew, Kol Nidre, and I recall that Aleinu. I don't think you say, Mincha, I don't think you say Aleinu. So some unusual, are there any practices other than that you can identify that our listeners would find quite unusual that differ from the Italian Nusach than what we're used to?
Yes, we have a specific Italian Nusach, which belongs to the branch of Nusachim, shared with the Ashkenazi Minago. The text of our prayers is much closer to the Ashkenazi than to the Sephardi. I would say that the Ashkenazi is closer to us because we are more ancient. The text of the prayer, but the style of praying or singing or reciting is totally different. It's quite similar to the European Sephardi, not Sephardi of North Africa. Similar, but not the same. And we are many specific minhagim. What you say about shofar and the hakafot, that is a Sephardi. The Sephardim make, and this is from Kabbalistic origin. In Hoshana Rabbah, what we do in the morning, it is only at the end. But what is typical, you can find in Facebook movies on this, is that people gather in the morning in Hoshana Rabbah. There are hundreds of people crowding the synagogue. They are celebrating Hoshana Rabbah, like in the times of the Beit HaMikdash. This is an incredible tradition. You see the people with the Aravot who like to be in the forest and with all the branches of willows that are agitated. It's an incredible, this is a very old specific tradition.
Yeah, I watched it on, you can watch it on the internet, and you're all in the white garb. Those go back hundreds of years, the white gowns?
Yes.
I assume. But is the Italian, the big show in Rome, is that the only show that is Italian Nusach in Rome? Or there's other shows as well in Rome?
What asking about?
Is the main show in Rome, is that the only show that has Italian Nusach and all the other shows have other or in Rome? Or are there other shows that have Italian Nusach?
Maybe other shows also.
Yeah. Now, a couple more questions. Some people might know that you're involved with a translation into Italian of the Talmud that follows on the French translation that Art Scroll is working on. But what was it that led you to think that this was worth the effort? It's such a big effort to translate it. And many Italians, I assume, know English or French. So why did you feel that it was important? And how has the progress been going? And who really is taking the lead on this translation?
Okay, the translation of the Talmud in Italian is quite a miracle. If I look at what has been published up now, we have published about six treatises, somewhat longer with two volumes, each one. In comparison to what is done in bigger countries like United States, we are our result is incredible. It was a challenge, and the new thing in this challenge was that the Italian government supported this project. They understood that the Jewish culture is important for the Italian culture, and there was a very strong support. And we managed to find people able to translate. It's not easy. It was even easy in the United States, where we have hundreds of scholars. It is a challenge, but it's an inspiring challenge. If you have to use a translation, if you have an Italian translation, being an Italian speaking, it will be much easier for you than to use the American product, which is very beautiful, which is very good, but we want a lot of yes.
You mentioned Italian government support. By the way, does the Italian government also support synagogues? Do tax money go to the rabbis or initials or no?
No. Oh, okay. In Italy, the government doesn't support the system. We pay taxes to the communities, and there is a system when you pay the taxes, you can choose to give a tiny percentage of the income to any religion you want. So you put a signature and the community will receive the money. We discovered that the people putting the signature are much more than the Jewish population, maybe twice or three times the Jewish population. So there are many non-Jewish or people who probably are Jewish by their origin that prefer to give the money to the Jews What the government gives to the Jews is the is a very important is the protection in terms of policy and making guard around the synagogues, which is a very strong investment by the government.
Hey, let me. I only have one or two more questions, and then I'll take go to the listeners. Many people might not be aware that until really the mid 20th century, even later, you had Italian synagogues that had something unusual for at least for us in America and Israel, organs being played by non-Jews on Shabbat, and that went back a ways. It wasn't recent. This is already done in the early 19th century, if not earlier. So, and that when the Jewish communities became one, I guess, village, worldwide village, that clearly wasn't something that could still go on. Yeah, the Bima had to be moved to the middle. So my question, though, is do you think that this was an authentic Italian minhag that unfortunately had to be pushed out because it's not accepted by the rest of the world? Or that this is something that was unfortunate that due to influences of Christian society, the Jews allowed in?
There are some sources, isolated sources, that witnessed that in some synagogue in the Renaissance, there were some musical instruments. They were not organs. The introduction of the organ was in the synagogue was symbolic of the reform approach, and when in Italy they built monumental synagogues like that of Florence, the introduction of the organ was according to this wave, ideological wave shaking the Europe. The solution found, as you know, was that a goy was playing organ in Shabbat. According to the halachic solution, which is not accepted generally, of shevut dishvut, but this stopped in the year 50s. No more organs were played in Shabbat. I remember when he was a boy listening to the organ in Shabbat, but this stopped, I think, at the beginning of the 60s.
Okay.
And since then, we use the organ only in marriages and in the morning of Shana because it's Chol HaMoed.
Yes, yes. Anyone who wants to listen, you can watch. I can send you the link and you can hear the organ on Hoshana Rabbah, and you have to hear the watch the comments of the Israelis who don't know what's going on, but that's... That's very interesting. When you go to the synagogue in Rome, you can look behind the Aron Kodesh, and you can.
Yes.
By the way, we do, for those listening who haven't been with us, Torah in Motion is planning on go, God willing, this summer. We've been many times, and you can definitely join us. And often we daven Shabbat during the morning, during the week, and the rabbi many times is there for davening in the morning. Let me ask you some of the questions now. I think I've spoken long enough. This is maybe you can punt, as we say in English. You can choose not to answer this question, but someone wants to know, probably more than one, the relationship between the community and Chabad, which in many parts of the world, it's a friendly relationship. In other parts of the world, it's fraught with tension. I don't know. Is that something you feel comfortable speaking on?
Yes, absolutely, yes. Chabad is like the Jews. The Jews look like an homogeneous world by outside, but inside we are very, very different people. Chabad also. So the relation with Chabad are depending on the personality of the specific shaliach and rabbi. Some of them are in the previous time were following a very aggressive approach with the established community. Some of them are much more ready to collaborate in mutual respect. So it depends from, even not from towns, it depends from people, how they feel this. It's not a Chabad by himself, but the Sharia Chabad, which is a little bit different.
Also, those who've been to Italy know that in certain places, the Chabad is openly messianic, and as opposed to others, which creates its own issues.
Okay, in Italy, the manager, the Chabad themselves, the manager to put a cover to hide this. They are not speaking openly. Only just one, a couple of them, but they are not speaking openly about this, and are very careful. If
yeah,
they
yeah.
are secret messianic, this is their problem, but openly they are not.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me look at some of the questions here. Ah, so someone asked...
Someone asked if I don't forget Bologna. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Bologna is keeping well. Bologna has a tradition also of Israeli students, not the Israeli, come to the university, which so makes it an interesting place. There is a small community, a rabbi who is a Roman of origin and Italian minag.
And of course, see, there's other communities. You didn't mention Livorno, which also has a solid community, I think, today. Livorno, but someone asks about the Nusach Italy, about Le'ela, Le'ela, which is correct, right? You say that in every tefillah.
Yes.
Le'ela. And that is not found in Sephardic.
It's a typical of Italian minag. Le'ela, Le'ela, say it every day. Le'ela, Le'ela, which is an expression that comes from the Targum of Mala Mala. All these differences are based in all the tradition, are documented even in the oldest basic Sidurim, like Sidur of Amram and so on. So any of these differences has his own basic support.
Someone asked me privately to ask you, is there any sense in Italy among the people, the rabbis and the ones studying, of a connection to study the Italian rabbinic works? You think of, let's say, Sfarno or the Rishonim, Rid Mitrani and all that. Is there any...
No, I don't understand. Say it again. I didn't understand.
Is there any focus at all in Italy today among the great Italian rabbis of the past to study their works and to republish them, commentaries? At all.
Well, there were many
many Italian rabbis, yes.
There were many important rabbis. We are making a course now in Zoom, giving once in a week a lecture about important rabbis, important Italian rabbis. And I opened the course with a lecture about Ramchal, Moshe Chaim Luzzatto. But there are so many of them.
Yeah.
Many forgotten. The problem is that they were forgotten even in Italy, and not only outside.
Okay. And someone asks, how has the community been affected by COVID? Have you suffered many losses over the last 2 years?
The losses were proportional to the general population, not specifically. And even the first year, we checked very carefully all the statistics. We discovered that we had a regular percentage of death among our population. But that year, the 2020, then the general number of deaths in our community was less than the year before.
Okay. Someone wanted to know if in teaching about the history of Jews and Rome, it's at all problematic. You have to do it, I guess, touchy. Although, again, the Rome we're dealing with now is Christian Rome. So that in and of itself would be a problem. Do you find it an issue teaching about the history of either of ancient Rome or a history of how the Jews were kept in the ghetto and persecuted? Is that difficult to speak about publicly today in Italy, or not so much?
Absolutely not. We speak very openly, and there are some hot issues which are not the stories of the ghetto, the old persecution. The hot issue is the behavior of the Vatican during World War II. When you speak about this and complain about the silence of Pius XII, immediately there is a wave of protest and apologetic attempts to defend him. This is not the issue. The other issues are part of the history.
And couple more minutes. Those who have been to Rome know the ghetto area, know all the restaurants. Without the tourists, is this did any close down? Or when we, God willing, we all travel there this summer, are we going to see it like it was? I know it must have been very difficult on the businesses, all the kosher food there, depending on tourists and things like that. Groups has it suffered at all?
Yes, all the system suffered because many Jews are involved in touristic activity, starting from bed and breakfast on hotels, touristic guides, agencies, and restaurants. So all the restaurants suffered by the crisis, but now they are getting out. Hopefully this will be resolved. What is interesting in Rome, that our kosher restaurants are visited by the wide population of Jewish, because they find it interesting to have Italian Jewish food or North African Jewish food. They found it very interesting, so they are attracted. And the king of this is the Jewish artichoke.
Yeah. So, and for my final question, I think unless someone sends in a question to the chat, do you see the Jewish community of Italy moving in a positive direction, getting stronger, increasing, or do you see it, the young generation moving to Israel or the United States and declining? How would you categorize the future, not just of the Rome community, but of the Italian community, if you speak at present?
Okay, there are two opposite movements. One movement is strengthening the Jewish identity, very vibrant synagogues, centers of study of Jewish life. They are growing. And from the other side, the general trend is demographic shrinking, immigration. There is no immigration to Italy because Italy is not attracting Jews anymore in these last years as it did before. Italy is attracting poor men from North Africa or of Asia, as whole Europe, but not the Jews. So the population is shrinking, assimilation is high, even if there are movement of a strengthening of the life of the community. In long terms, I don't know what will happen. The numbers on the outside Rome are very sad. Hopefully, Rome will resist much more, but who knows?
I know that you're very busy, taking care of a large community with many things to do. And I can say both myself and for all our listeners, and that we really appreciate taking the time. This will be on YouTube. There'll be many, many people to watch it, to learn about, the great and storied community of Rome. And as I said, anyone can email me and I can send you some of the links I mentioned, including the Rabbi has a talk. It's in Hebrew, but at Bar Ilan, I think it was at Bar Ilan, in which he describes the history of the rabbinate in Rome. There's one rabbi whose name I saw wasn't mentioned, just the dates. Anyone who's been on our tours will know who that rabbi was, who doesn't get mentioned. It's like you know, the one who shall not be named. I think that's in Harry Potter. But that's also part of the history of Rome, this individual rabbi who unfortunately abandoned his people. But without any further ado, I then want to thank Rabbi Desani for so kindly agreeing to come speak to us. And anyone who goes to Rome and needs assistance, you can go to the synagogue.
You are welcome. Come soon.
We hope. We hope. This summer, God willing, we will be back. And once again, we can all be one people going visiting and experiencing. And anyone who just listens, even if you don't come with us to Italy and you go yourself, there's plenty of good, great Jewish guides. And you have to make sure you go to Tfilah at the Great Synagogue of Rome. It is something not to be missed, but make sure if you go Mincha, Ma'ariv, you have, give yourself some time. It's not like America, where 15 minutes in and out. It's you have to be prepared to wait a little longer as they remember everyone, all the Yahrzeits, everything like that. So, but it's a sight to behold, maybe the most beautiful synagogue you'll see in Italy, although in Europe, although some people might disagree, but certainly one of the top few. So I thank you very much, Rabbi.
You are welcome, and shalom, and hope to see you here.
Thank you. Bye-bye.